From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made at Nazareth College with a donation. Nazareth is home to the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue. The center regularly hosts conferences and community events to promote constructive conversation. Nazareth has a chair in Catholic Studies, and the leader of the Hickey Center is Dr. Muhammad Shafiq, formerly the head of the Islamic Center of Rochester. And now Nazareth will expand its interfaith program even more. That's thanks to the Konar family of Rochester. The William and Sheila Konar Foundation is giving $500,000 to promote religious diversity. That money will help create the Konar Center for Tolerance and Jewish Studies at Nazareth. The late William Konar was a Holocaust survivor who came to Rochester at the age of 16. Here on Connections, we've been intending to have a discussion about how interfaith dialogue can unite us, especially at a time of polarization. Last month, Greece police charged four people who are accused of being involved in a plot to attack a Muslim community in Delaware County near the Catskills. The community is called Islamburg, and according to the Associated Press, followers of a Pakistani cleric settled Islamburg in the 1980s to flee crime in New York City. The peaceful community was shocked by the revelations, which came after a 16-year-old Greece student made threatening comments in the school cafeteria. The plot to attack Islamburg led to the recovery of 23 guns and three homemade bombs. Greece Police Chief Patrick Phelan told WXXI News that if officers had not intervened, he believes people could have died in an attack. This hour, a conversation about interfaith dialogue. And as we introduce our guests, I want to stress something. I reached out to Howard Konar of the Konar Foundation to invite him. I thought we should save a seat for him, given that this new Center for Jewish Studies in particular comes largely from the Foundation's generosity. And today I was surprised to hear from Howard that he would prefer not to come on the show. I say surprised because most of the time when someone gives a large financial gift, they're happy to talk about it. Well, Howard told me the opposite. His foundation supports a range of causes, but they rarely speak publicly. Their goal is not to put their name on something and just take credit. Their name is on the new initiative because Nazareth wanted to honor the Konar family. And I told Howard that I was disappointed as a journalist not to have his voice in the discussion this hour, but I ended up respecting his family even more because their aim is not to write a check and just earn publicity. So there's a lot to be said for that, and I appreciate that. Howard Konar and the Konar Foundation, thank you for that. But that chair is empty this hour. Here are the guests who are here with us in studio. We'll say hello to Dr. Susan Nowak, Professor of Religious Studies and the William H. Shannon Chair of Religious Studies at Nazareth College. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's my privilege to be here.
Also with us is Diane Oliver, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Nazareth College. Diane, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Thank you, Evan.
And with us is Morgan Hand, Vice President of the Student Interfaith Council at Nazareth College, who has attended the Parliament of World Religions and Interfaith Youth Corps Interfaith Leaders Institute. Morgan, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Tabassum Javed is on the line with us, who is the President of the Islamic Center of Rochester. Thank you for taking the time. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody.
Well, there's a lot to discuss here. Let me just start briefly with the news out of Nazareth, because the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue, I think, has justifiably earned its reputation, not just in our community, but it attracts leaders from around the world for regular events. And I just want to kind of go around the table, and Dr. Nowak, I'll start with you. How do you feel about the news from Nazareth this week that you're going to be expanding even more?
I am absolutely thrilled. This has been something that I've been looking forward for a long time, because now what it does is it gives us, along with a very strong Christian voice and a very strong Muslim voice and representation from the community, also an equally strong Jewish voice. The Jewish community has been involved with Nazareth on many levels for a long time, but now we are able to say, here is the way in which the Jewish community is really part and parcel of what we do at the college.
Okay. Dr. Oliver, what did you make of the news?
It's nothing but exciting for us. It builds on the strength and the history that we have with the Hickey Center and the ability to really promote interfaith dialogue, to promote diversity, and to bring important voice to what is already a strong community within Rochester. The Rochester Interfaith Network has a long and proud history here. And so we've been excited to be part of that with the Hickey Center. What the Konar Center really does for us is it's more. right? So it's enhanced, it is more, and it brings really into the into a stronger role the Jewish community, who, as Dr. Nowak said, is a strong partner already with us. We want to make sure that the history and the wisdom from that tradition as well is also part of those conversations. And so while we have had engagement with Judaism in the community, this is a strong and clear voice and commitment to say, Judaism brings something unique to this, as does Islam, as does the Catholic tradition, as does other as do other aspects of Christianity, as do our students and leaders who are secular or humanist. All these voices are at the table, and the Jewish voice is an important one, and we're glad to have expanded that presence at Nazareth.
And Morgan is vice president of the Student Interfaith Council at Nazareth College. Tell us about what that council is and what the work aims to do.
So it's a relatively new group on campus. Mm-hmm. It's been around for a few years. It was called something different before. It was the Interfaith Council, and now we aim more towards the dialogue and the leadership building on campus. So it's a group we have representatives from. We try to get one from each of the student faith groups on campus, or just the religious, faith-based, all the spirituality groups on campus. And we just, this semester, we're focusing on dialogue between different faiths and different values. So we're doing like compassion or love or any of the positive values that are shared. And we have one from each of the groups.
Well, I want to turn to Mr. Javed, who's on the line with us, the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester, because, you know, for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about hosting a discussion just on the jarring news that came out from the Greece Police Department, their announcement of those arrests. And I think it made national news because these events are still so jarring to us that we can consider in our own community that we may have people who would plot an attack on potentially religious grounds. How did that news hit you, first of all?
Well, it was both things. It was a shock, absolutely, that it is so close to home. And some of these students at this such young age would have so much hate in them that they would like to act out that hate in such a disastrous way for a community of peace-loving 200-plus people living in an area which they call themselves, you know, like their haven of peace. So that was the part. But the other part that was not shocking was that there is so much hate that has permeated through the media, through the chat rooms, through other sites where people do not second check the information. They do not go and research it further. And so they take it at face value. And all that hate, when it's spewed, you know, in these younger minds and even some older adults as well, is that, you know, it adds on to what they are believing already, which is erroneous view of somebody. So it begins with hate. Then it begins with demonization of the other. Then it also adds on by making the other person different than yours, and therefore different is something bad and not to be respected. And so it just it goes into that cycle. It's like one thing adds on to the other, adds on to the other. So it was very shocking, and at the same time, there was something that I always felt was because of how the Muslims have been targeted. You know, the FBI already noted that 27% increase in the Islamophobic situations, as well as 38% increase in the anti-Semitic crimes in the last year. And so it doesn't help. And I think the atmosphere is such that anything that is non-white is looked at with suspicion. And so right from the top of our government, you know, this kind of message has been sent out. And not in a subtle way or anything, but very directly. So a person like me, who is an immigrant as well as a Muslim, you know, feels that I'm being attacked at two levels, and always considered myself as somebody that I have to look over my shoulder because of that environment.
And President Javed, I want to follow up with you on a comment that you made to Randy Gorbin last month of WXXI News, and then I'd like all of our guests in studio to also weigh in on this, because I think this concept here is so important. You told us last month that those kids, people who are arrested, you think that it would have been different if they had more familiarity with people who are different, and that there's a real danger beyond just ignorance of one another, there's a real danger to developing maybe occasional intents of actual violence. Tell me more about your concern about the lack of familiarity we have with each other.
Yeah, absolutely, there is. Like, I'll give you an example. Now, the flip side of that, which is really that I've always celebrated it, is that all my children were on the football team in high school. And so we had a lot of the teammates come all the time to our home. We would break for a prayer for 5 minutes. You know, they kind of saw, they had glimpses of the Islamic, religion as well as the culture and how these, all the three boys were brought up and everything and their value system and how the parents interacted and everything, the whole thing. And so for them, now, when I think about those 30 or 40 people who came in direct contact with us and with our three kids, you know, they could never, never, ever have plotted something like that. They could have never thought about that because to them, the other was no longer the other. It was a familiar person. It was a person just like them with same aspirations, with the same kind of family life, with same kind of, you know, ambitions to make their life better in every way. And therefore, those that interaction made that different. In fact, there was a very interesting admission. Two of the kids later on, like 3-4 years down that, after they are graduated, admitted to me that their parents had stopped them to visit our home because they thought that maybe we would be inculcating such values that would be contrary to the values they were brought up with. And this is the two kids who, after high school, 3-4 years, they are almost graduating college, but, you know, they kind of, you know, they said, we have been carrying this burden. So they kind of took me on the side and said, Mr. Javed, here's something we want to share with you. And so this is an example of that. And they were able to rebut that. They were able to bring it at the dinner table, this conversation, that mom and dad, this ain't so. And so if enough of that happened, if enough of that interaction happened, I cannot imagine, you know, there's always going to be some devious minds. But generally speaking, this will not have happened if they had any interaction. In fact, one of my desires right now is that I wish I could go down and meet each one of them and have the opportunity to ask them and talk to them and maybe take my imam, you know, with me, you know, to be able to reach out to the kids, and show our love and affection in spite of what they had in mind.
That's a powerful idea. And let me ask our guests in studio. I mean, Morgan Hand, can you add your thoughts on just the way, maybe, do you have interactions with people who are different? Do you find yourself, I don't picture you as a person who would ever find yourself either hating or being overly suspicious, but do you find yourself opening your mind even more when you spend more time with people who are different?
Definitely. So especially with the Parliament and the ILI that I went to, but particularly Parliament, we had a lot more opportunity to interact with people that are very different. For example, we actually volunteered to help with the lunch. So at Parliament, the Sikh community serves the lunch as part of what they do every time. So it's a langar, and we volunteered and we helped, and they serve it and they give back to everyone at Parliament. They serve this free lunch. And it's just beautiful. You go and you serve everybody. They sit on the floor and it's a very traditional langar meal. And that really was one tremendous experience for me. I describe myself as glowing afterwards because you just, it really opens your eyes to different traditions and how beautiful they are. And I think that if everyone has the opportunity to do that, it definitely opens their eyes to every tradition, even just experiencing one firsthand like that. So I think it's really important.
Dr. Nowak, that story was jarring to me, I think, just as it was to so many listeners of WXXI about this plotted attack. Do you agree with what you've heard from Mr. Javed just about the notion that we are sort of bubbling ourselves at our own peril here?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a real call for us to say, talking about religious literacy is not an abstract theoretical idea. If you look at the American society as even though we have a very high percentage of religious attendance still across the country in terms of religious literacy, understanding really the faith beliefs and the behaviors and the actions those faith beliefs lead people to, we're terribly illiterate. We don't know how much is shared, and we don't know what's distinct. And the distinct can be something we really need to value. But if we had a religious literacy, if we had an understanding of the values, the goals, of what it means to grow up as a Jew or a Muslim, as a Hindu, as a Native American, I mean, we have the Haudenosaunee here in our community. If we understood, we would see that, and it's not trivial rhetoric, we are really brothers and sisters. We Yes. are all one humanity. And I think it would push us to begin to explore that difference in a way that isn't strange and dangerous and threatening, but something that enhances how we live our own lives.
Okay. Dr. Oliver, what do you think?
There's no question that when we engage others who are different than we are, and the truth is that that is the case. Everyone who's sitting in this room is different than I am in some way. But it's acknowledging those differences and trying to learn from them, from hearing the passion of people and the experiences of people. When we hear others into speech, then I think it's exactly right. It becomes very hard to hate the person if you understand where they come from and why. We do this especially around issues of religious diversity, racial and ethnic diversity, sexual orientation or identity, ways in which we encounter people who are different than we are allows us to imagine other possibilities than the one that we know. So I think that working across lines of difference is really important, not to erase the difference, but to recognize it and to hear that as something important that contributes to who we are.
We'll get to some of your feedback on the phone in our second half hour. I want to read an email that I got this morning that came from Alex in Geneva. He writes the following. He says, "Hi, Evan. I'm glad you're having a conversation about religious dialogue, but I feel one point is regularly left out. I'm a gay man. I often hear that intersectionality means understanding how oppression is layered, and I don't doubt that. I have felt discrimination personally. I have no doubt that people of different religious faiths have felt discrimination too. But why do religious people get a pass for wanting to deny my rights? In particular," Alex writes, "if evangelical Christians and Muslims have their way, my husband and I would not be allowed to be married. We couldn't have children. Here's some data for you," he writes. "CNN reports that more than half of British Muslims think homosexuality should not even be legal. In the United States here, it's a bit more tolerant. 48% of U.S. Muslims do not think homosexuality should be accepted by society. And nearly two-thirds of white evangelicals said the same thing. What do they think my husband and I should do then? Move? Please don't give religious people a pass for anti-gay attitudes in this discussion." That's from Alex in Geneva. And that comes on the heels of a number of things. First of all, Alex, thank you. And Alex attached more data, and I can get into that if you like. Earlier this week, President Trump was at the National Prayer Breakfast, and he defended an agency, I think in Michigan, that is an adoption agency that denies gay couples the right to adopt. And so that was one of the news headlines as well that people have been talking about. President Javed from the Islamic Center of Rochester, what would you say to Alex in Geneva after that email?
Well, certainly if I exactly follow the scripture, and I don't claim to be a religious scholar, I'm just like a lay person who has some knowledge of my faith as I practice it. I would say that if I exactly followed, you know, like the verse and chapter, so to speak, of the Quran, you know, that would be something that would be not permissible according to the faith. Now, in terms of my, you know, acceptance of the person at the human level, I would have no difficulty at all. In fact, I have many people I've known who were gay and who were in many situations expressing that very openly and everything. And I have no problem with that at that level. But there's a difference, as I said, and I don't know, Dr. Novak may speak to that from, you know, because there's a theological perspective, and then there's a perspective where we are all children of God, and we are under the umbrella of the larger humanity. And that is what makes us, you know, endearing to each other.
Okay, Dr. Novak, you want to add to that?
Sure. And just so you know, so can Dr. Oliver, because she is also a theologian.
Yeah.
So, and I have great respect for what she would have to say. I don't give religion a pass on this. And I say that as someone with a doctorate in religion, but I also say that as a sister of St. Joseph and a committed Roman Catholic. And I know that people will probably perk up their ears and say, oh, but you belong to a church that has no place for gay people with any kind of commitment as full human beings who live out their faith, belief, and fullness. I work within my tradition, and I work with other people in the interfaith arena to say any kind of distinction that will dehumanize, that will enable us to degrade or exclude, shows where our own traditions are falling short, where our own traditions have not probed the heart of the religious tradition in terms of text, in terms of ritual, in terms of a history of what it means to be a human being from within the perspective of their faith. And so what Alex said
in Geneva, yep.
is the challenge that each religion must look square in the face and say, where does my distinction enable me to dehumanize and exclude? And that is where I must drill down deep beyond to find the place within the tradition that enables inclusivity and a recognition of humanity. And if we can't find it there, then we must question whether that is a part of the religious tradition that hasn't been handed down in a way that's distorted and needs to be reexamined.
Okay. Dr. Oliver.
I would absolutely second what Dr. Nowak said, that religion should not get a pass on these issues. To recognize that as we hear the voice of members of the LGBT community, we have got to understand what their experience is and how it butts up against the very values that religious traditions hold to be the case. And just as we started this conversation with the idea that understanding difference is part of how you have the conversation, part of this is also hearing the stories of Alex, hearing the stories of members of the LGBT community, and understanding how that what that experience looks like, and putting those in conversation with the values that we have in religious traditions. That is central. So there should not be a pass that is given, and I think we have to hold religious traditions accountable. By the same token, I will also add, we have a number of religious traditions and sub-communities within religions that do an amazing job in this work with the LGBT community, and I'm grateful for those and want to continue holding the broader religious community accountable for how they do and don't value others in that category.
All right, the president of the Rochester Islamic Center has what we call a hard out. He's got to be done in 90 seconds because I know he's got to get on somewhere on this Friday afternoon. So let me just ask in that final minute.
I have 5 minutes, Evan.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure that you're on schedule. I'm trying to respect your calendar
you.
As best
Thank
I can.
Thank you so much.
And by the way, let's schedule a separate hour sometime very soon to come in and we'll sit down in studio together. I'd look forward to that.
Absolutely.
President Javed, do you feel when it comes to that question of getting to know you better, getting to know someone who is different better, that our country has done a better or worse job? And I'm going to pick a date that things really changed for American Muslims, and that's 9/11. Do you feel in the last two decades that, I mean, certainly that raw feeling in those weeks, months, and even a couple of years after 9/11, that's one thing. But now we're almost two decades out. Do you feel that we are on a better path with understanding one another's differences, or does it feel the other way for you right now?
No, I still think I'm going to look at the optimistic part of this, and that is a lot of work has been done in a very positive way, in which people have reached out to the Islamic centers throughout the nation, to all the mosques. There has been a lot of interfaith activity between the mosques and the churches, as well as the general community, and certainly Islam 101, Introduction to Islam, that type of seminars, that type of presentations has also helped, which actually happens at the Islamic Center as one. There's one coming up on March 30th, 31st, sorry, which is going to be same kind of thing where the Christian-Muslim dialogue and different perspectives are going to be shared. And last time we had Islam 101, we had close to 400 people at the Islamic Center.
Wow.
So that tells you that 400 people got to hear firsthand what Islam is about and got to meet the people who represent the faith. And that was something where, all those gaps can be bridged. So a lot of positive thing is happening, but still at the same time, we are fighting Islamophobia quite a bit. We're still seeing examples where people, where are women wearing hijab, you know, somebody standing in the line yanks off the hijab from the back. Somebody standing in a line to get an ice cream cone out of in New Jersey, this event happened. You know, two guys came up and they just yanked the hijab from that lady who turned around and dropped the ice cream, you know, while she was getting that from the vendor. And so there are, I mean, there are still plenty ugly events happening in the nation, but I'm looking at the positive side, and the positive side is that people are coming and wanting to know about Muslims, and I feel honored to have the opportunity to do that.
Well, how can they get in touch with you in the center if they want to attend such an event in the future?
Okay, it is posted on our website like 2 to 3 weeks ahead of schedule, and so that is one way of doing it. The other way is calling the Islamic Center number, and at the front desk you can get this information. And basically, as I said, you don't have to register or anything, you just walk in.
Tabassum Javed is the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester. Again, I appreciate not only your time today, but I look forward to a future conversation with you right here in studio. Thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody.
You got it. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to take our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and we'll continue the discussion. We'll get more of your feedback as well. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263 WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email us, connections@WXXI.org. Let's get that break, and we're right back here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, former Rochester Mayor Bill Johnson joins us to talk about racial dialogue and what he perceives as an occasional rush to judgment. Then in our second hour, we talk to the authors of a narrative cookbook with new approaches and recipes for old world Jewish foods. We'll sit down with them to talk about their work and talk about modern food culture Monday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before we continue with our discussion here, a brief hello from producer Megan Mack on the final afternoon of our winter membership campaign. Hello.
Hello. The final afternoon and the final 30 minutes to participate in a dollar-for-dollar challenge we have going on right now, thanks to Nanette Noken and Carl Wessendorf, who are members of WXXI, want you to join them in becoming part of this WXXI community. If you listen to Connections every day or a few times a week, maybe during your lunch hour, maybe as you're driving around, and you have come to rely on the show for in-depth conversation with experts and people in our community who want to share their perspectives and values, we are here because of you. We want to remind you about that. This is a member-supported public station, and we cannot be here. We cannot be on the air unless people like you call 454-6300, go online to WXXI.org, and tell us how much you value public radio and your experience here at WXXI, and pledge your support. Again, a great time to do it because of that dollar-for-dollar challenge just until 2 o'clock. We are well behind our goal. We want to make sure we get there today. So now is a great time to jump in and do it. 454-6300.
All right. Thank you very much, Megan Mack. We're talking about interfaith dialogue this hour. And our guest from Nazareth College in studio, Dr. Diane Oliver, is the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences. Dr. Susan Nowak is Professor of Religious Studies and the William H. Shannon Chair of Religious Studies at Nazareth. And Morgan Hand is Vice President of the Student Interfaith Council at Nazareth College. She's attended Parliament of World Religions and Interfaith Youth Corps Interfaith Leaders Institute. So a lot to discuss there. Let's go ahead and let's grab a phone call and then much more to talk about in the way of some of what we've already started discussing this hour. Manan in Rochester on the phone has been waiting. Go ahead, Manan.
Hi, Evan. Diversity and dialogue in religion is a very difficult issue. I think, Evan, there was the Protestants and Catholics. You talked about Irish people yesterday. Mm-hmm. Protestants and Catholics in Ireland were fighting for a long time. Religion and violence in Israel and Palestine. Pakistan Army murdered Bangladesh people and did genocide and raped women in Bangladesh. India, Hindus and Muslims killing each other. Lebanon, Christians and Muslims are fighting. And America, the white Americans are, you know, the Ku Klux Klan, white Christians are forming groups, evangelical groups, to hate everybody. So there's so much hate in religion and violence that it's going to take many years to build this dialogue. Everybody has to work together to build this dialogue and diversity, which is hard work. All these religions preach, you know, Islam says, we're the only ones going to heaven and you have to be Muslim. And Christians say, if you don't believe in Jesus, you won't go to heaven. And the Jewish people say, they're the only ones going to heaven. So religious dialogue and diversity is in the Unitarian Universalist Church, where everybody is welcome. I'm not a church goer, but, you know, I just wanted to suggest that there's so much violence in religion all over the world. And in America, where the Ku Klux Klan, white skin and white Christianity, WASP, wants to destroy everybody with hate. And they need to bring less ignorance and more understanding. Thank you, Evan.
Yeah, Manon, thank you. So on that subject, and I think this has come up with Dr. Nowak before, but I think this ground is worth sort of plowing as much as we can here. Manon is pointing out that if you look at sort of strict religious tenets, there is a belief that, you know, Mormons believe only Mormons go to heaven, and Jewish people might believe that only Jewish people. I don't want to speak as a non-scholar. I want to be very careful, but I understand the point that Manon is making. That, and part of that point leads to a question, which is that when we have religious structures and belief systems in any society, is it inevitable that there would be some level of either hatred or condescension or viewing as the other, because of the very idea that if I believe I'm going to heaven and everyone else at this table ain't, it's, you know, there's going to be maybe some natural tension. Can we possibly distill all of that out if heaven and literal afterlife paradise is on the line here, Dr. Oliver?
I think it's kind of the wrong question to ask, can we agree on a concept of the afterlife? And if we don't agree, that means that we cannot live together in constructive ways to hear one another's stories, to understand why someone is passionate about a certain reading of the Quran, or how someone understands a text in Matthew or in Genesis to provide meaning and support for their lives. Religious traditions are central to some of these conversations because at their best, they try to embody, to ritualize, and to continue things that where people find ultimate meaning and purpose in their lives. And therefore, anything that provides a context and a content for ultimate meaning in our lives defines a lot of who we are. In my time of both being a religion scholar but also a practitioner of religion, I find that most people don't simply accept lock, stock, and barrel some particular interpretation of their religious tradition. And the ways in which those things become more complicated is because they know this person. They've met Manon. They've talked to Alex. And that starts to make them think through what their own issues of ultimate meaning are and what those values look like. We can say, you know, religion has all these things that are violent. Sure, as do many other things besides religion. So it is not exclusive to religion, but it especially comes out oftentimes in religion because that is how people are articulating and living out their values and meaning in the world. So I don't think that one can simply say it is religion that does all these things, because religion is also a great force for good. It is a both and. And as I said before, I don't want to give religion a pass on this at all, quite far from it. But I also think that to simply say religion is violent and has no place in the world is to forego the positive ways in which religion also influences society. So the issue isn't throw out religion, it's to ask questions about how do we have those moments where religion is in fact not including everyone, as Alex brought up, or is it causing violence mm-hmm. in some way because of certain ways that its adherents indicate the tenets of that tradition. Those are the questions we should ask as people across lines of religious difference. As well as people who are not religious. Those are the conversations we should be having with one another and not simply marginalize an entire group because of a subgroup within it. I come from the Christian tradition, and I want nothing to do even vaguely with the Ku Klux Klan, but I can't pretend like they are not somehow informed by the same tradition that informs me in a different way. I am responsible for engaging those questions.
Okay. Dr. Nowak?
Oh, I would absolutely agree. And I think one thing that we have to point to, again, is the importance of religious literacy. But I think we also have to look at the role that nationalism is playing in many of these conflicts. And so while religion most definitely is a component and plays a role, many times the role of religion and the conception of religion that is playing out is being shaped by a form of nationalism that is extremely exclusive, and that then takes the religious tenets and sets them up in a way that provides for no interpretation, that provides for understanding only in one way. And there isn't a religious tradition that doesn't have a continuum of self-understanding, interpretation, and yet, at this point in time, I see across the globe where we are allowing an extreme nationalism or an exclusivist nationalism to drive our understanding of the role of religion in society. And I would say for us as a nation, and I have just returned from a civil rights journey that we now have at Nazareth. So I spent 9 days with 20 students in Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, looking at the place of the place of civil rights and how it hasn't yet been realized and brought to its fruition in our country, but seeing the role that white supremacy and segregation continues to play in our national consciousness and how it's given a religious foundation that I believe is false, but is there and is being used today to separate us. So I think we have to bring sociology, psychology, an understanding of what political science is, can help us understand about our national makeup, and we have to ask some very hard questions about how we understand what it means to be an American today.
Give me one of those hard questions.
Why is it that in the United States, Sunday morning, and this would be, you know, in a Christian context, but why is it one of the most segregated times in our week here in the United States? Why is it that within Christianity, blacks are with blacks and whites are with whites and ethnic groups are with ethnic groups, and not because there's comfort there, but because there's a need for safety, because there's a need for shoring up identity in a way that is either exclusivistic or is because that is the only place where I know I'm going to be accepted. Why do we have that?
Come back on a different day. We'll do all of your hard questions. Morgan, how do you feel about the question of whether it is inevitable that there would be some violence at the hand of religion when we're talking about belief systems in which people are making expectations about the afterlife?
Yeah, I would kind of go off of what Dr. Oliver and Dr. Novak said, but I think that out of every difference, there's potential for it to become something that it doesn't need to be in terms of violence and hatred. But I think that in terms of the difference in religion and all other differences, there's also potential for it to be great and cause a lot of change and a lot of positive direction. And I do think, back to what was said in the phone call, that yes, it will take years to do those things, but it also took years to get us here. And it took years to get to the point where it was turned into something negative and hatred. And I think that I think out of all differences, it's inevitable that there's going to be clashing, but I don't know that there needs to be such deep hatred or violence out of it.
Well, let me just read an email from a listener named Herman, who says, first of all, he asked a question. Is there anything we can do immediately to help the people of Islamburg and show our support? I know several people who would like to help. I don't know the answer to that, Herman, offhand. I'll see through some of the channels that I have if I can get an answer, and I'll email you back if I do there, Herman. It's a really sweet sentiment. And I do suspect the people of Islamburg have heard a lot of support, but I think no amount of kind sentiment is ever too much. Herman also writes, a few years ago, I heard a story about a skinhead who had repeatedly made harassing phone calls to a cantor. One time when the cantor's wife answered, she invited him to dinner. After a long silence on the line, he accepted. And that was the start of a transformation in his hateful attitude and the end of his harassing calls. Herman, I don't know if that story is sort of mythic or true, but there are plenty of stories that are undeniable, and I'm not doubting it. I mean, it's certainly possible, because there are plenty of stories that are true. And one of the examples, and if you've heard me say it before, but you haven't read the story yet, look up the New Yorker's piece called Unfollow, one of my favorite stories ever. And Megan Mack, producer, we talk about dream guests for the show. Somebody asked me that earlier this week, and I couldn't think of an immediate answer. Well, now I did. Megan Phelps Roper, that's who I want on the show. She's the granddaughter of the founder of the Westboro Baptist Church and chose, finally, to leave it in her 20s after decades of indoctrination. But it was openness and love from those whom she claimed to hate that broke her down. That story in The New Yorker is a wonderful piece. And she's a great example of what change looks like. We'd love to have her on the show. So there you go. There's one of the ones I'd love to have on the show. Do you believe in that? I mean, like, Dr. Oliver, when Herman shares the story, do you think that absolutely makes sense to me, or do you think that's probably not real? I mean, do you find yourself more optimistic that people can change?
I'm definitely optimistic that people can change. I think most of the time that change does not just occur in a one moment that something happens and everything is completely different afterwards. Occasionally it occurs that way. But most of the time it occurs by developing sustained relationships with people who orient around something, whether it is religion or racial or ethnic identity or status in the LGBT community. When we make those connections across difference and don't just see the difference in the other person, but also recognize our connections and develop a relationship, it's not that the differences are erased. In fact, sometimes they are heightened because we recognize how different someone else is than I am over some particular question or something that they value or how they practice or how they see the world. Being from Alabama, I find a lot of things in Western New York that are very different than what I grew up with. And so, you know, I grew up in the states that Susan visited with the students most recently for the Civil Rights Journey. Those differences are important, and they make us who we are. By the same token, understanding people across those lines of difference helps us appreciate in a new way. And I even want to circle back just a touch to the issue of the Civil Rights Journey that our students and Susan and others at Nazareth College took to recognize, once again, that religion both contributed to that situation of the problems with civil rights with the Ku Klux Klan, and religion also contributed to it being better. The same religious tradition, I would argue, interpreted very differently, fueled both the Ku Klux Klan and Martin Luther King Jr. And so trying to think about how do you take those things that you value and understand how you get two very different outcomes is part of what it means to understand people across lines of difference. And so it is that understanding and then the dialogue that comes rather than the rush to judgment that says, oh, you are other than I am. I shall not go there, and therefore you must fit all these other categories. It's like creating a straw person that you beat up against and say, oh, well, you must be all these things, and therefore you don't develop the relationship that is really at the heart of transformation. So do I think the story is mythic or true? My guess is there's probably some piece of it that does happen in many occasions, and sometimes it's the start of something. And sometimes people are not in a place to feel safe enough to invite the other in. And I think that's also important to recognize, especially for marginalized groups, minority groups, to invite someone who is attacking them in, I think is too much to simply ask, even if there may be moments where they might choose to do that.
It's a good point. And on the subject, Dr. Nowak, of the way that incremental change that Dr. Oliver is referencing happens, so here's a little bit more polling data, because Alex's email earlier, which I thought was a poignant email, referenced some polling data, but I want to also highlight where things have changed. So according to Pew Research, here's a statement. Homosexuality should be accepted by society, yes or no? 2007, 27% of U.S. Muslims said yes, only 27%. And in 2007, only 23% of white U.S. evangelicals, Christians, said yes. Same statement. Homosexuality should be accepted by society. 2017, 10 years later, it went from 27% of U.S. Muslims to 52% of U.S. Muslims saying yes. It went from 23% of white U.S. evangelical Christians, 23% to 34%. slower growth on the white evangelical side, but still some change. Is that a sign that makes you feel good, or do you still see two-thirds of white U.S. evangelicals saying we shouldn't even accept homosexuality, and do you hang your head a little with that?
Oh, I have my day when, like anyone else, I'm saying, oh, why not more? But what I am saying is, yes, that does give me a feeling of some hope, because what it represents in a very concrete fashion is what Morgan and what Diane have been talking about. We can change one another. We can help one another begin to see difference. And in many ways, what we do is we inspire one another and open the door then more widely for one another. Because I can only imagine that the change came about because there was very careful discussion. There was persistent sharing. People don't change in a vacuum. They change because of relationship. And however that relationship happens, whether it's your neighbor, your friend, something you've read that then you really work on, it brings you about to a different place. You know, and I'm thinking Abraham Joshua Heschel during the civil rights movement. Where was he? He was linking arms with Martin Luther King Jr. and saying, I felt like my legs were praying while he walked with him. Now, Heschel, what did he do? He carried his experience of escaping Nazi Germany, prizing his Jewish identity. But what did prizing that Jewish identity do? It brought him to walk with Martin Luther King Jr. And that, we don't have to worry about, is that myth or not? That is truth. And when the marchers were on their way from Selma to Montgomery, one of the parishes that gave the marchers a place to stay overnight was the city of St. Jude, a Roman Catholic parish along the way. Roman Catholics at that point in time were not a majority group, nor necessarily a group that was well integrated. Yes, Diane is saying yes. But what did St. Jude's do? In the midst of knowing this was not going to be a popular move, they let the marchers stay there overnight. They provided what the marchers needed so that they can go on the next day. Again, that's not myth. That's people changing and being open.
All right, let me get a phone call. Jim in Rochester has been waiting. Go ahead, Jim.
Very good program. I wanted to say something about the professor who took her students down to Alabama, and she mentioned the fact that Sunday morning, the most integrated period of time.
Most segregated.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Well, it's very simple. You got to remember, when Luther Allen went to the Episcopal Church in downtown Philadelphia over 200 years ago, he was physically and verbally kicked out. So he started his own church, the Remoral Lammy Zion Church. And there's an affiliate here in Rochester that's 195, 96, 97 years old. And also, look at that situation in Charleston, South Carolina. That's an old historical church. Going back to the pre-days, the beginning of the Civil War. The kid went in there and shot and killed 11 people while they were worshiping. So this stuff runs deep. But also, I wanted to say, in terms of bringing the three Abrahamic faiths together, I think that's a tremendous asset, and it's going to brew very well for this community and the nation with the workshops that you're doing, because it was a great British scholar, Karen Armstrong. I don't know if you know of her, or heard of her.
Absolutely.
But she's written more books and knows more about Islam. Wrote a book called The History of God. And she had one word to describe our current situation. She just said, be tolerant of people. And I find that to be true. So I want to congratulate the religious staff, the philosophy department, religious department out there for bringing the three great Abrahamic faiths together. And maybe we can dialogue. And as Father Herschel said, who really walked with Martin Luther King, because they had a common bond. He knew what oppression and bigotry could do based on his experience in Nazi Germany. and that itself. In fact, he was a very close advisor to Martin Luther King. So that's a good thing that you're doing out there. Congratulations, and keep the good work up.
Jim, thank you for the phone call. I know they appreciate that, and Dr. Oliver wants to weigh in on something there. Go ahead.
Well, and I would add that to that appreciation, we are very excited for the Rochester community that we're going to be able to create the Konar Center for Tolerance in Jewish Studies. And I wanted to harken back to something that our caller just said about tolerance and how important that is. We often think that the word tolerance simply means I'll put up with someone else. And as Dr. Shafiq, who's the director of the Hickey Center at Nazareth College, often says, we hear that with a face, right? So you make a face, oh, I'll tolerate that. But what we really mean by that is a very deep sense that at its best, it's not just putting up with another, but it's active engagement with another across lines of difference. And so what we hope that the Konar Center is going to do is to bring the wisdom of the Jewish tradition, engage our students around that, and also help us to understand the deep meaning of tolerance, which is that it is engagement. It is not simply knowing things, although that's important. It's not simply putting up with someone else. It's engagement. And that's what we really want the Konar Center to be able to help enhance. We already do this through the Hickey Center, and this is another dimension that we're adding about which we're very excited.
And Morgan Hand, final word comes from you, the student. A lot of pressure on every succeeding generation that you guys are going to fix this. You guys are going to fix. But you know what? I see in succeeding generations more tolerance, but also tolerance in the way that Dr. Oliver says. Do you see that among your generation?
Definitely, yeah. I think that it's a lot more of a focus, not necessarily from the people that we have interacted with before, but just from us in general, to make sure that we're reaching across different lines and getting to know people for who they are and how we can use that to better things instead of to create more divides.
I can see why your university is proud of you and the work that you're doing. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Morgan Hand is Vice President of the Student Interfaith Council at Nazareth College. Dr. Susan Nowak and Dr. Diane Oliver from Nazareth, thank you for being here and sharing your insight.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Much appreciation for Tabassum Javed, who is the President of the Islamic Center of Rochester, who joined us earlier this hour. And as we close the week, our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer extraordinaire of Connections, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. I hope you are a member of member-supported public radio. If not, you've got some time before 6 o'clock. Join us and have a great weekend.